quality. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Tuesday, October 17th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today as we have a conversation with the members from the Bahamas Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Today, I should have two members of the Bahamas Association of Bahamas Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. I think there's an acronym for that. B-A-B-V-I. I think BAVA. They could pronounce that all for me today. And we have two members who will be, hopefully, Whitney Adley is on and Dario Charlton is on. Are you there?
Yes, we're here.
I'm here.
So now, the acronym. How BAVI?
BAVI.
Yes, BAVI.
BAVI. Did I get it?
Yes.
Okay, good.
That's correct.
So I could be calling it that because it's a long word. You know, it's a BAVI, which is the Bahamas Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. And we have two members of give a history of the organization, how long it has been in existence. How are you two members of BAVI? And what is this Blindness Awareness Month? So this will be our conversation for today.
I'll take that one.
Okay, go ahead.
And thank you for having us, CA. My name is Dario Charlton, and I serve at the pleasure of the Bahamas Alliance for the Blind and Visually Impaired, or BAVI. And we are an advocacy organization, a nonprofit, that advocates for the well-being of those that are living with blindness and visual impairment here in the Bahamas. We have been in existence for some 26 years and counting. And we are happily in a position to accept individuals that are living within this community to promote their independence, to promote the preservation of sight, and to promote the reintegration, the rehabilitation, and the alignment of individuals with blindness and visual impairment into everyday life. Blindness Awareness Month is celebrated October. And this is now our 15th year of promoting, preserving blindness awareness. And we really just seek to have individuals know more about blindness, know about our story, know about the causes of blindness, the work hazards, and the different types of diseases that kind of drive individuals into blindness. Of course, there are individuals that are born with blindness for many different reasons. But it's our hope, especially today, to promote individuals within our youth arm. And Whitney is here to tell her story and to let others know what it is that she lives with on a daily basis with her walk with visual impairment.
And I'm going to go to Whitney right now to hear her story. Mm-hmm. But I want to ask this, and if either you can participate inside this particular question. And I want to talk about living with impairedness, living blind in the Bahamas and traversing the streets, using the sidewalks, crossing the street. How easy is that to get from point A to point B? And how can we assist? I want to get that out of the question before I start and go on with the narrative of Whitney. But go ahead. Can someone address that?
Whitney, you can give from your point of view and then I can chime in.
Okay, with the sidewalks, with living with blindness, at some point, I don't think it's safe because different sidewalks or different places isn't cautionary for blind people, even with passing to walk across, you know, and there are cars that come speeding and stuff like that. Like, there isn't, like, much, like, where you can pass. As a blind person, a car would immediately stop, or, you know, a car would have compassion. Most cars would have compassion, you know, even with walking with a cane. Some sidewalks are really not even, like, are really high and low, where like it's really beat up, where you cannot even walk properly with your cane because your cane getting hooked in grass and dirt and different rocks, and it's really a high and low ground mostly a lot of places. And with walking, especially when you want to be independent and walk by yourself to different places, I don't think it's as safe, especially when you walk with your cane, because it still be a tassel with you walking in your cane getting hooked up into different areas and different formats, because the sidewalks are really up and down. So it's still a scary situation, especially there's some sidewalks are so small that you don't even have much space to walk. Your cars come speeding across you and you hitting your hand or something like that. So that's a scary thing as well.
So with Bavi, how are you advocating for change? Because I know I will go walking and I'm noticing that there are drop holes on some sidewalks. And every time I see them, I say, I wonder how blind Bahamians are able to traverse the road. You know, I think of Bremen, who's an avid caller, right? And he's independent. He just walk all over the Bahamas by himself and his cane. And there are times when I'm driving past him and I'm seeing that where he's close to falling in ditches. And I'll be able to be shouting, hey, there's a manhole open there. You know, there's the lamp pole that fell down where they never moved for 5-10 years, still there. How are you as an organization getting the Bahamas in general acquainted, aware that something needs to change?
So we do it on a couple different fronts. And we start with empowerment. This past Sunday, and it's celebrated October 15th of every year, we celebrate International White Cane Safety Day. So white cane for us as individuals that are blind and blind and visually impaired, it symbolizes a level of independence. It gives us hope. It gives us strength. But it becomes a tool that allows us to traverse obstacles in a safe manner. My white cane for me, and my level of visual, I consider myself to be a VIP, a visually impaired person. It gives me an opportunity to identify that there is an obstacle that is in front of me, whether that is a hazard at a different depth. It may be something like you advise that's in my way. It might be a fallen lamp pole. It could be a fallen street sign. But it gives me an opportunity to identify that something is there, and it gives me some option to say, okay, I can go over, I can go under, or I can go around this obstacle. And so what we do as an organization is we put on a program, a 12-week program, which is called Adjustment to Blindness. And a part of our program is mobility, mobility guidance. It gives us the opportunity to learn how to use a white cane, to learn how to use those obstacles and how best we can traverse. We also work and hope to work with organizations like the Royal Bahamas Police Force. We've started a partnership and hope to really fester that or grow that partnership to give the motoring public and also those of us that are living with blindness and visual impairment that opportunity to interact with each other. The motorists can know what it is they should do when they come in contact with someone that's walking with a white cane, and individuals with white canes can learn what they should do when they come to a corner, learn what they should do when they come to an intersection, at a stop sign, at a red light, or a crosswalk. But we also promote the need for us to have more crossing guards, the need for us to have sidewalks that are standardized. So the dips, the brakes, and the stops at a particular crosswalk are all done so to standard. Whitney's had a lot of experience with international standards, international sidewalks, to which I think she can definitely say that there's a difference between when you're in the U.S. or a developed country and the Bahamas. There's a clear difference with the sidewalks.
Okay. Whitney? And before we go to Whitney's story, because you know I want to talk with Whitney, right? You mentioned that she has experience with international awareness in terms of sidewalks and experience of being blind. Yeah. I want you to do a compare and contrast. What is the difference? So my listening audience can appreciate and say, okay, I see what we need to do and I see why we need to do it. Can you just go into some examples of what is the difference you encountered?
Okay, what is different is being adjusted to the Bahamas thing, when I went away, my eyes opened really up a lot to the way how different it is in the States than over here. The sidewalk are way more bigger. Let's say with that. Some of the sidewalks walk are way more bigger and they have hazards, especially when a person touch a line. When they reach the end of a street and they touch a line, some cars stop. Even with people that have cane, I really notice, especially when people cane are out, cars, even if they're coming at fast speed, they stop as soon as they see a cane for a person to walk past. And at first, to me, it was like, oh, wow. This would really be nice if the government, especially with working with the road, if we have like different hazards, you know, especially even with the sidewalks that people could, that visually impaired people could really feel safe and independent to cross sidewalks or to walk places, or even the compassion of other people to know that, okay, that people who are differently enabled can have that independence and have that respect from others around in the Bahamaland, that if you see a person that has a cane and person for help, to have that respect just to even stop your car. You know, it's not all about looking cool and driving nice cars, but it's also having love and compassion for the people to know that, hey, there's a person that is walking by, that, you know, make them feel, just at least give them that feel special. Know that, okay, that they can pass through and they can feel that the behemoth that us as a Bahamaland care. Because when I went away, even when we walk out the car and you have people that came and they run to us just for help. And I was like, oh my God, I wish that the Bahamaland was so much more compassionate, because I feel like as a country, we stand alone and we do have people that is caring, but we just need that more compassion and more hazards and more open sidewalks so that people can feel at peace with walking, because some people are even afraid to walk with their house because some people don't even have compassion with their cars. They will drive past you and hit your hand, splash water on you. They don't care. So we just need to feel that even if we walk outside our house, there's peace and there's compassion, and we need to promote that, because that's in the international, it's really nice seeing that from an international perspective.
And back to you, Dario. Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead. Add to that, Daryl.
Yeah, to add to it, you know, when you travel, it's almost as if you're stepping into a different dimension. And mind you, it could be where there's a variation of people like we have here, but the abundance of people who care, you really feel it. People that come to your aid, experience with traversing the streets here in the Bahamas is you get a variation of people. But you have some people that would show you the way. The other day when I stopped and I took the bus downtown, just to get the pleasure of it. I did have something to do downtown, but as opposed to getting a ride, I said, you know what, I'm going to take the bus today. And walking down Bay Street, you know, you have people asking, hey, are you okay? Is everything okay? And there's a gentleman that came up to me and he's like, hey, you know, where is it that you're going? Maybe I can help. And even though I knew where I was going to go and how I was going to traverse, I said, you know what? Let me take the opportunity just to see the level of compassion. Let me give him that opportunity. Let me not block his blessings. And it was a really good experience. He talked to me. He was well-versed with helping people. And I wondered if he got any particular training, because it is something that our organization does. We train people to be sighted guides. And he never did. It was just out of the kindness of his heart. And something like that was really moving. And I think, like Whitney is saying, if we can get more people to just openly be that way, our country itself would be better.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, man. I sat back and said, wow, I just don't know what to do. Yeah. But I'm glad that you are socializing us in terms of what should be our part and helping the visually impaired. So I appreciate that. I see I have a caller on the line, and from there I want to go back to Whitney, because I know you're having a youth arm of this Blindness Awareness Month, and I want to hear Whitney's story about her becoming blind, growing up as a visually impaired person, and then now surviving, thriving in this Bahamas. I want to get some detail of that. But let me go to the caller first. You listen to what the caller has to say, then we go back to Whitney. Is that okay?
Awesome.
Okay.
Good. So go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Good morning to you and your partner. I want to ask them a question, then I'm going to say something. What is the difference with being blind and visually impaired?
Okay.
Yeah, I can take that one. So okay. Visual impairment and blindness is something that is diagnosed. A person that may be considered visually impaired identifies that your best vision is above a 2400, which really means that what a normal person can see from 400 feet, we can only see from 20 feet in our best eye. Myself, in my right eye, I'm actually totally blind, meaning I can't see anything from my right eye. At my last measurement, I think I was about 2800. So what you can see from 800 feet, I can only see from 20 feet.
Okay. Why ask? I wasn't born blind. I just became blind about a little over 5 years. Okay. So I've seen parts of the world. I know the Bahamas. I've already had people that drove me around and tried trickily, played with me and say, you can't tell me where we are now. But I know Nassau. Okay, because I used to drive a bus in Nassau. But I'm blind. Now, I don't like to use the word to me. I don't like to say I'm blind. I like to say, well, I'm being challenged with my eyes. Because I believe it's a difference. I take it, this is how I'm studying it. You born blind. But once you had vision before, I always believe you can get vision again. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I certainly do.
And okay, it's like you growing up and you have a broken hand. Eventually, your hand is going to heal. Huh?
Yeah, it's a very good point of view.
Yeah.
But I would not go down and say that I wouldn't see. I'm sure I'm going to see again.
Can you see anything now? Flashes of light.
Yeah. What I can see now, I'm looking as I speak to you. I'm looking through my window, and about.
So you may be considered like I consider myself a VIP, a visually impaired person.
Yeah. Okay.
And Whitney is the same.
Have you ever received any formal training, or are you a part of any organization that promotes?
No, the well-being of those that are living with blindness or vision impairment?
I would like to be. Not now.
Awesome.
But
You should join into our organization.
Yeah, but I'm going to get some information. But I just want to say this. About a year and about 3 months ago, the same window that I'm looking through now and can see the lines in the blinds, I couldn't see that. My both eyes were dark, black. Like you go into a room, and they just turn off all the lights. And it's just black. I did a surgery on my eye, and I cannot look through my window and tell you it's night or day. Before our time, I couldn't do that. Everything just looked like night to me. I have a granddaughter. I've never seen her before. She's now 5. If she were to come in the front of me, I can see her. I can't tell you how she look. I can't tell you if she black, brown, yellow, or white. But I can see her body. I can see her movements. So I think my sight is coming back.
Amen.
You know, I think it's coming back. And in closing, the doctor told me, when your sight was going, you didn't realize your sight was going until it was gone. So your sight will come back. And one of these mornings you wake up, you can just be able to see. And I believe that.
I believe that too. True God.
I hold that in my heart every day.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
I don't like to talk about it because I usually cry a lot when I talk about it, but you know, it's something I have to accept. You see, yeah.
Keep the faith, man.
Yes, sir.
Keep the faith.
What I'm going to do after the program is over, I'm going to call back, speak with the host, so y'all can maybe leave some numbers and some things.
Yeah. I'd like to hear your story.
Get together and see what's happening, man.
Yes,
definitely. Okay, and I want to say, man, there is a lot of people that have a similar story to yours, mm-hmm. and we want to encourage you to reach out. You know, we offer opportunity to have peer counseling, and your story can definitely be a story of hope and power to someone else. So
there is a support group that exists in New Providence now, that someone who just got blind this week, last week, last year, who's having an emotional time, trauma, depression, emotion.
That's exactly what our organization is there for. We welcome individuals that are transitioning to blindness, those that are thrown into it, and those who are born with blindness to come together as a community to inspire each other and to be there for one another.
So give me a rundown through that. I'm recently blind. I have an emotional time of getting used to the concept of, you know, I'm blind, right? And yes. I want to reach out to your program. Give me like a step-to-step on what can I anticipate? What should I expect? Joining? Why should I join? Something to that effect.
So as one of the executives, and Whitney and I both serve on the team, we are all there to hold one another's hand because there are similarities between each of us. Each of us find ourselves on the doorsteps of blindness for various reasons, but we share some similarities in this walk. What individuals can expect, they can expect to be a part of a family, a part of an organization that has a calendar remote, but also to welcome individuals in. We give them the training and the tools that they need in order to live a life of a blind person, but also live a life that's independent. So we help to show people how to cook, how they can clean, how they can iron their own clothes, opportunities to learn to use their devices, their cell phone, to use a computer or a tablet, surf the internet, listen or watch movies, however you want to phrase it, be able to read books. Whitney is a part of organizations where they have book clubs, where they do game nights, where they do a number of different social opportunities to get people just to understand that being blind is just a state of being, and is your mind that allows you to travel
and carry that way. Going through blindness is different. I won't say it's easy. It's not easy. You go through different grief. You know, it's different stages of grief. But once you have that support system behind you and helping you, once you're around people that understand you, because even with me dealing with my blindness, becoming visually impaired, I have good people that support me and cousins that love me truly, that guides me and protect me, but as me and that can relate to me, help me more. So it's just going through different grievement and a support system that stands behind you when you fall in short to be like, hey, I just need you, brother or sister. That's what it is, being your sister and your brother's keeper.
Correct.
And Dairo started that for BAVI, Bahamas Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and as they celebrate the Blindness Awareness Month, you're focusing on the youth of your organization. And Whitney being a member of that branch, I start off my conversation with you, Whitney, with how old are you?
I am 26.
You're young. A beautiful young Bahamian woman. And I want you to tell me the story of you transitioning, becoming blind, and what happened. And then I want you to give me a narrative on how it has impacted your life in terms of a young woman who wants to, forgive me for this, get married, date, go away, you know, get your apartment, buy clothes, buy jewelry, you know, dress up, that living, that quality of life. I want you to give your narrative also to include that. So I just want to give you that guideline, and then now you can start talking now.
Okay. My name is Whitney Alexandria Ali. I am 26 years old. I have been battling years. At the age of 18, I was diagnosed with Steven Johnson syndrome. Steven Johnson syndrome, SJS, I should say, is an allergic reaction to medication that attacks the mucous membrane, the eyes, the genitals, or whatever. So in my situation, I was healthy as an ox. I used to wear glasses. I have a little stigmatism, but I could see clear. I went to Temple Christian High School. I was in urban. I was in technical cadets. So I had, I came up seeing sighted. I went to the doctor because I wasn't feeling too well, and I had a throat infection. I wasn't feeling good. And I was taking pills for my teeth because I was supposed to get got my teeth the next week. But I wasn't feeling too well, and my mom took me to the medicine clinic where I saw a doctor, and he gave me some pills, and my mom told him that I was already taking medicine, wasn't going to, cause any problems with the medication, or it wasn't going to be, any hazard with the medication or whatever. So I started taking the pills, and after taking the pills, my tongue started to itch. So my tongue became heavy, antibiotics. And she called back the medicine, and the doctor told her to bring me back in. And she came and she brought me back in, and my skin started to, get little tiny bumps on it. And they gave me this needle in my hip. And all hell broke loose after that. My body started to get big bumps on my face or whatever. And he told my mom to take me to the hospital, where I was on female medical 2 on the ward. And my body was actually going against everything. They couldn't give me medication because they don't know what I was, they don't know what was going on with me at that point. And I stayed on female medical 2, and my body started to burn from the inside out, meaning that everything that was happening on the outside, on the inside of my body came out on the outside of my body. So what it did, it started to attack my body, and I started to burn. Like, my skin started to peel off. I started to get big blotches on my healing, and I still couldn't see in the hospital, but my eyes started to get full of mucus, they call it.
How old were you at this time, Whitney?
I was 18, and I didn't know what was going on with me. I was a healthy person one day, and the next day, I was sick, because I went to the hospital and I took medication, and spent a week in female medical 2 and my body started to deteriorate. Like, literally, my skin was peeling off my body, and doctors then was coming to see me, but they didn't know what to do. And this doctor came and he looked at me and he said, "You have SJS, Steven Johnson syndrome." And he told my mom about it. And he told my mom that in order for me to get better, my body has to go to the withdrawals, meaning that it have to take action. Thank God I was already healthy, but a lot of people don't know about Steven Johnson syndrome in today's world, but it comes from medication. So I was a victim into the situation because I didn't know what was going on, not even knowing that it would take me on this journey of being visually impaired. So I spent Christmas and New Year's in the hospital. They had to rush me into ICU and hook me up to tubes because my body started to shut down for me. I literally felt like I was in a house fire because my body was burning from the inside. I was in excruciating pain. So my body started to shut down, and they rushed me into ICU, where they put me in induced coma, where I was laid up in ICU for a month. I was in a coma for like 2 weeks. I spent Christmas into the hospital, and it was traumatizing. When I wake up, oh my God, I thank God that I'm still here today. But I went through, like, not knowing if I would make it through, or, doctors, them not knowing if I would make it through, but prayers, being around people that love me and care for me and my pastor and my spiritual mother and my family and my cousins and my mom and people standing in the gap for me, you know? And that's how my eye situation began through my situation with me being burned. I went through years with me even healing, going through my healing process with me becoming the woman I am today, my body being healed. And actually, my body is fully healthy at this point. Everything came back, so the body naturally heals itself. I can't really take medication like that. And even if I do take medication, I have to go through blood work every 2 months to make sure that the medication isn't messing with my blood. So this is the life of living with Steven Johnson syndrome, you know? And I end up getting messed up through
how
the situation.
Long
I
did
end
it
up
take for your
dry eyes.
How long did it take for your eyes to go completely blind? In terms of you being diagnosed with a Steven Johnson syndrome, your body had a reaction, right? Mm-hmm. You're in the hospital, you're in intensive care, right? They induce you into a coma. But mm-hmm. When did you realize, hey, man, my the sight getting fuzzy? I can't see.
It's so crazy. After me opening my eyes, okay, I realized that my eyes was a little bit blurry than before, but my eyes didn't worsen. I just started to have extremely dry eyes, and it like my cornea, like my lid was like hardened, and like the lid used to scrape against the cornea. And I started going to a great doctor in Harbor Bay, Dr. Rogers' office, you know, Bahamas Center Medical, the Bahamas Center in Tingham. He's a really good doctor, and I started seeing him, and he helped me through my process, and I started to use eye drops, and I started to wear contact lens to protect my vision or whatever. And then I started seeing that my eyes was gotten worse because I was in COB trying to study to become, I wanted to be a pediatric nurse, but my eye was worsening during that process. And it took a whole toll on me because I couldn't see like how I used to see and write like how I used to write, you know, but my eye never went to say, it went totally blank. It didn't. I do have scary moments where I had a perforation. I had a perforation where my eye was leaking fluid from the back, where they administer crazy glue in my eye.
They put crazy glue in your eyes?
Crazy glue. So I went through extreme medical pain with my vision, where I had over like 8 surgeries alone on my eye throughout the years, where they actually had to administer crazy glue in my eye to plunge the hole, and then they put contact lens, and especially going through that and screaming. And some days my mom had to come out the hospital room and run out because of the pain and extreme pain of getting crazy glue in my eye where they plunge the hole, and I have different nurses trying to hold me, but you know, like they comforting me through the process.
I want to interject here, Whitney, forgive me. My mother is a jealous person when it comes to me. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm picturing that your mother's a seam. She take you to the hospital, expect you to get better. And you are hinting that the medication caused a flare-up, which resulted into your blindness. Did your parents, your family ever pursued any, we have to get compensation. This is a different daughter I have now. Was that, is there any time that you seek any type of compensation type talk?
I reached out to the doctor that, it was a private doctor actually. I don't want to call his name over the call, but my mom reached out to the doctor telling the doctor about the situation. Even up to me going into ICU and my induced coma, the doctor stopped talking to my mom. He cut off all ties talking. Like literally cut off all ties. My mom, I'm an only child. My mommy only child. So my mom, she was in a battle, just praying and being around people who love me and pastors. And my pastor would come and see me, and my spiritual mother, she would come every day and awe me from by the front door. When you touch that door, that ICU door, your hand full of awe. Just praying for me every day, but I feel it more from my mom and seeing me in that position and knowing that this is my child, I can't help. I have to rely on just God and doctors to bring my child through this, you know, because my mom couldn't do anything but to stand by my bedside and watch me suffer, and she couldn't do anything. So at the point of thinking about when my mom, the situation, my mom not even eating and just dealing with seeing her child suffering and she can't do nothing is what breaks my heart through it. But I just feel like whatever that doctor did to me, I honestly feel like you reap what you sow. So no matter him not being there for me, because we did try, and we went to doctors and we went to lawyer offices and we tried to get compensation, and you know, lawyers them didn't help after a few months of us going and carrying my medical records, like they just give off the case. And what's so sad about it is this country is so small where you have lawyers and doctors working with each other that you know, you don't know what happened behind closed doors. So my main focus is I trust that God brought me through the situation and everything that I went through. And even with my eye situation being so costly and me having to do cookouts and so just to see doctors in the States, God never lead me astray and God never give up on me. You know, and my family and my cousins and my friends, they never give up on me. And I got people, I even had been in relationships where, like, the guys that loved me, like, especially my ex that loved me, like, they always stuck by my side and they brought me through it. They never judged me. And even though I felt like a burden to other people, they had to remind me that when you're not a burden, that's what going through visual impairment does to you. You feel like a burden where you don't want to lean on. Having people that genuinely supports you and care about you, they bring you through it.
Let's talk a course with me.
Support system.
What type of course are you talking about? When the initial phase and these surgeries and traveling?
In 2020, I had a traumatic situation where my eye perforated, and I was in the eye ward for 2 weeks. And my mom that was planning a so-so for me to do a stem cell surgery, but all that had to go on the back burner, and my mom did a so-so then. She called Clint Watson, and I had people came in and they give money, like even PMH gave $5,000 towards my situation. Nice. But my surgery alone, just for one eye, was $20,000.
God have mercy.
And thank God for my doctor, even in the States, and my doctor over here, he waived his fee for himself, but not the hospital fee, because the hospital fee and his fee is totally different. But we still had to pay the hospital, and I am now in $60,000 debt at this moment.
You are currently owe $60,000.
$60,000 debt at Bascom Palmer. Currently now. And through the grace of God, my doctor in Bascom Palmer, don't care how much debt I am, he's still seeing me and just add on to the debt. And even like how Bascom Palmer has where they help them, but because I'm not a citizen of the state, mm-hmm. I am not able to get help from that trust fund. So I still need money and still trying to do cookouts, especially the surgery that I'm going on as a stem cell surgery coming up. I'm going on this big surgery. It's a $10,000 surgery there for just one eye, you know? And then the next eye, so that's a whole $20,000 surgery there. So I still need help with medical funds.
Wait, we have another caller who wants to engage you. I want him on the story. I'm sorry to interject, but the caller said they desperately want to reach out. So let me let the caller come through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Caller, go once.
Hello.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes. I'm listening to this broadcast today, and I have visual blindness also, Ms. Nuri. And the young lady happened to be the same age as my two younger kids. What I want to say is that I'm not associations, but I would like to encourage her because she seemed to be breaking down. And her parents to just look at the situation as something we have to deal with. Because, like I said, I'm in the same situation as her. I am 59 now, And I want her to know that she has a remarkable story where she has all these experiences, and I want to be associated with their association because they have moved me, you know, in listening to you all today. Mr. Nuri.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to touch home to where I called Aaron Green's show before and spoke with you also. Mm-hmm. Remember, I referred you all to the erroneous record in archives at the Charles Farquharson Estate.
Yeah, I reach out to you. There's no response.
Yeah, well, my number is 3255163. And I haven't gotten any response. That's something which the court to correct and deal with because of the educational system, our history. You all deal with that, but I would like to hear from the young lady, and I would like to hear from the association.
Yes. I'll forward on the number too.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Mr. Bethel, if you remember.
Yes, sir.
Okay?
Thanks again, Mr. Bethel.
Thank you, Mr. Bethel.
I want to continue your story, Ms. Whitney. I'm thinking you are 18 years old. You just start dating. You're an attractive girl, courting, have hopes of getting married, have hopes of dancing and party, right? And
there's a comma. I'm still going to get married.
Of course. You're beautiful, of course.
Oh, my God. Okay.
But see, I am an emotional person, right? Where I sometimes question God and say, Lord, God, why me? You seem to have a lot of faith, right? Like you have a church family who support you. And being so young, 18 now going on, now being 26, living with the challenge you're going through for like 6 years.
Seven years,
right? And one of the callers called and say that at times he would start crying that, I'm not putting words inside his mouth, why him? But the idea of dealing that you're blind living in the Bahamas, that must be hard, right? How do you survive? How do you make it day by day?
Okay. When I first went through my situation, everybody go through that time where they felt depressed. I went through depression stage where like, I had like a person, my cousin used to call every single day, and she used to get so mad at me. She had to say, Whitney, you gotta continue to pray. I was so, at some point, I was so angry with God because I was like, God, you know, I had a conversation with God. And I was like, man, I go into church, I praising you. I have friends then that, you know, do so much things. And why am I in this position? But I had to come to a realization that my story has not only touched people in the Bahamas, but my story has touched people to Minnesota, Europe, Atlanta, South Carolina, because I'm not only in a Bavi group in the Bahamas, but I'm in a stage group all around the world where I travel with people, and people look up to me. People older than me look up to me. And I feel like, and I had to come to realization that wherever God is about to take me, I'm going to enjoy the ride, because I feel like if he didn't carry me through the situation, the person that I am today, the person that I was, I wasn't going to be the person that I am today. Although I still feel sad and I still feel like I'm going through that process of elimination that, okay, when I find a person that's going to love me for me, despite my visual impairments, despite my situation, I feel like the only person that can block that is me. I can't allow my mind to take me in a dark place because my eyes have nothing to do with the person and my personality of who I am. I can only, you know, say to people that no matter what you go through in life, everybody has to, everybody go through trials and everybody go through tribulation, but it's your story to tell. You have to jump up from your situation, and you have to know that this person inside of me could be going through a mental situation, not because my situation is on an older parents. That doesn't make that person no more better than me. But what makes my story so unique is that I speak old and I talk old. And from me speaking old, I drew people to know that no matter what you go through in life, you have to continue to fight. Know that God is, if God bring me, bring you to a situation, he's going to lead you through it. And I had to put that in my mind that no matter what I go through, no matter what trials and what mountain come before you, God is going to break that mountain down. And you have to speak it and you have to manifest that no mountain in front of me, that mountain coming down today in the name of Jesus. And I believe that. And it comes to pass.
Okay,
so
Whitney,
that's what helped me get through it.
And you joined Bavi.
Yeah.
Why did you join Bavi? How did you get introduced to Bavi? And how has Bavi helped you in terms of your transition, getting used to what you're going through? And then I want to add this. You're young. You mentioned marriage. With marriage comes children. Does Bavi give classes in terms of persons with impaired sight having children and rearing children? Does that your organization give support for that?
I joined Bavi. My cousin saw an ad inside the newspaper and she sent me it. It was a story about a young guy in Bavi as well. And I let my mom read it. She called Des, the one of the guys, the old president Desmond, and Desmond talked to Natalie, God rest her soul. Natalie called me one day. I mean, I was on the phone for an hour and she was talking to me and she heard my story and she let me join back. She told me, come join the organization. I came and I talked my story to the organization even before I joined it. And I became a member last year, October, actually. I became a member of Bavi. It has been a journey. You know, I meet a lot of people that goes through stuff and you get a lot of people that has kids in Bavi. I also have friends in the States that have kids that are living on their own, but you get a lot of people that have kids. It's just, you can do the same thing, but everybody can do the same thing as a side person, but we just do it in a different format. You know, kids. You know, a person in Bavi that has a child who is also blind as well, you know, and although that person get help, they still take care of their child and they still live their life with their child. So you still, your mother and your father instincts kick in right away. You know, you may need help with certain things, but you still can go around that course, but you just have to do it in a different way. Trust me, when you're in dire need or when you know you have to buckle up, you buckle up and you get to it. It's life, I would say, and perhaps.
And this way, I have Charlton jump in for just 30 seconds. Does Bavi have assisted care for its membership? Support, I should say. Like, I need someone. Yeah. I'm living by myself, and they come in.
So over the many years, our organization has seeked to find ways in which we need to develop and find opportunities to have an impact, a positive impact on the lives of our members and the lives of the general public. And each year we seek to develop new avenues to do so. Opening our understanding to the needs of individuals. We have members that have had children while being members of the organization. And of course, some of the social assistance that we provide do seek to empower these members in this regard, but we don't have a specific program that speaks to new mothers that may be living in blindness and having children, but it's definitely something that we can seek to work and have an opportunity to speak to directly within our training program. Of course, we have members that male and female, and so a father or mother that may be new to fatherhood or motherhood would be an opportunity for us to introduce a training program that will help. And so thank you for that, Bobby.
Yes, I
want to stop right here. I know I have you on twice. I know I'm supposed to bring you on Thursday. I run out of time. I want to continue this conversation because I need to know the next step. So I want to end it now, and then Thursday we'll pick it back up. Again, I'm speaking to members of the Bahamas Association for the Visually Impaired and Blind. And this is speaking to Dario Charlton and, of course, Miss Whitney. Where's Whitney last name? Whitney Adley. And they'll be back with me again Thursday. Sorry, caller. Thursday, call me back and we'll continue this conversation. This is the Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Have a beautiful day.
Okay.